Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me, I've got two special guests from the Shore Leave podcast, Heather Barker and Jeff Hewlett.
Yeah, you got it.
So I messed it up this time. I got it right back when we had Jeff on for Devil in the Dark.
Oh, God, that was, oh, yeah, that was a great talk, too.
That was a lot of fun.
We could do more of those. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely get you back on to do some more. But today's going to be a little bit different. We're not doing an episode breakdown or a movie breakdown or an animated series breakdown. We're talking about the Star Trek convention, Star Trek Las Vegas. And I'm going to be educated today because I've never really been, and these guys are experts. They've been multiple times, and we're talking about Star Trek Las Vegas on a budget.
Yeah. It can be done.
Yeah, I think it's important to know these little tips and tricks on what to do because it is a very expensive endeavor. I save up all year to go, but there are ways to go and not spend $3,000 basically on a week trip.
So we got to hijack an airplane. That makes that free, right?
Or you can walk, depending on where you're coming from.
We're both in Northeast, Jeff. So I don't know if walking to Vegas is a.
If we start walking now, just hang up the call. Start walking now. We can make it.
Do the Forrest Gump, run across. Yes.
A big long beards by the time we get there.
Yeah.
Gosh. So the Star Trek Las Vegas convention, for people who haven't been or have never heard of it, is the largest Star Trek convention in the United States. They generally aim to have over 100 guests. I think right now we're like at 106, 107. And I think they generally meet that goal every year. One of the downsides is that over the years, so this year will be my ninth year. I started going in 2009. At this point, they kind of tend to just have the same people. So it's your major Star Trek cast, the secondary characters, which may be in a few story arcs or a one-off episode or whatnot. And then they try to get some of the writers, producers, behind the scenes people who've worked on all of the series, there. So at this point, I've kind of seen everyone. This year specifically, they just made a really awesome guest announcement, and they're having astronaut Dr. Mae Jemison, who was also in an episode of Star Trek TNG Second Chances. So that's really exciting because over the years, I think a lot of us have expressed wanting to have, more scientists. And yeah, whether they're on Star Trek or not, it's just really cool. Most of us Trekkies enjoy science.
It's a good crossover.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's really cool to have guests like that. They used to have more. They used to have some NASA scientists come and do little panels, and they've kind of lost track of that in their most recent years. So having Dr. Mae Jemison there for me, that's the guest of the year. For me.
Oh, yeah, so somebody new to go in and interact with hear from. Because, just having a NASA panel, that would just be amazing to listen to.
Yeah, and they did, at Mission New York.
New York did, yeah. They had a lot of science at Mission New York. And in the vendors area in Mission New York, they had a really big, nice booth set up there with all sorts of cool information and a nice video you could stand and watch and scientists who actually come and talk to you and you could ask questions. It was really, really great. We were talking about this after Mission New York last year that we were hoping that Creation might take the hint and do something like this. So I guess we're getting back to that now.
Yeah. Well, and it helps that she was in Star Trek, even though it was just a tiny role, but still. But there have been other astronauts that have had guest roles, I believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure I'd heard that when I was listening to a podcast the other day. I just can't remember off the top of my head. Our good friend Claire Little would know, but alas, she is not with us this evening or this morning.
It's early.
This, whenever you listen to this.
So it's the biggest Star Trek convention. It is a 5-day convention at this point. It used to be a 4-day convention going, what was it, Thursday through Sunday, Jeff?
Yeah, it was Thursday through Sunday, but I think they've lengthened it to 5 because of the two big anniversaries, last year being the 50th of TOS and this year being the 30th of TNG. So next year, I think, will be the big litmus test, whether or not they're going to go back to 4 days or keep it at 5.
They'll probably keep it at 5 just to milk it as much as they can. money talks, as the expression goes. Although I just can't imagine doing a 5-day con. I've done PAX East a couple times, a 3-day con, and that I'm just wrecked at the end of 3 days. I just can't imagine.
I think that once you go, because most local conventions for me anyway are 3 days maximum.
Same here. Yeah.
And when I used to go, like when I started going to STLV, I think I'm trying to remember if we just did like a Wednesday through Sunday. It's been so long, I don't know. Nowadays, I go at least the day before, so Tuesday, and then I usually come back on Monday. This year I'm going Monday to Monday because I'm a podcaster now and I need to meet with my podcast partner here and we've got a lot of work to do.
Oh my God. The amount of work this year is going to be huge, but
yeah. So we tacked on an extra day so that we can get some work done. The whole thing is going to be work, but so the biggest thing about STLV for myself, and I think I can speak for Jeff, is that over the years, we've made so many close friends that are now our Star Trek family. And
our podcast family,
family too. So the big draw for me now is to go and see those people. I don't focus as much on the panels. I still go down to the convention during the day and hang out and look at the vendors room and go to some panels. Last year I did a lot of cosplay, but honestly, like 5 days is never enough.
You know, that's actually – I was going to say the same exact thing, Dave, because chiming back into your earlier point of, you know, cons being 3 days around where we are and I guess around where Heather is, it's pretty much a standard thing of Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, I've been going to horror conventions and sci-fi conventions and Trek conventions here in New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania for a lot of years. And the one thing that stuck out to me about STLV that was different was when you go to the cons around here that were, you know, quote-unquote 3-day conventions – I would go for 1 day or even half a day and go, is this all there is? There's really, I don't know why anyone would want to come to a Chiller or a Monster Mania for 3 straight days. This is exactly the same layout and there's really nothing else going on. I mean, maybe one celebrity will do a 1 day on a Saturday and you can only go Friday. So you might want to go back Saturday to get that guy or that girl. But when you go to STLV, there's literally so much going on. I mean, the layout doesn't change, granted. You still got the vendor room in the same place, the photos, and there's panels that are scheduled for all 5 of those days across 2 different theaters. So there's always, literally always something different going on. And then plus the fact you've got so many Trekkies condensed into one place, and most of them stay for the duration of the con. You can't help but get into some great conversations and meeting new people. And it's a completely different way to go to a convention. It's far and away different than any other convention that I've gone to in my life.
It's sort of, I mean, we were talking about this off there, but it sounds sort of like the SOE con where like everyone is like, is into the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know what? You're right. That's a great, great, great analogy.
Since everyone's into the same thing, you're doing the same thing. Sure, if you go to a Comic-Con, everyone's into something a little bit different and all those things. Yep. I mean, sure, there's crossover, but at a Star Trek con and then the SOE con, that was so amazing. It's just you can walk up to anybody and be like, oh, hey, and then like you're instantly friends because you've got the bond of the game or you've got the bond of the show because that's why you're there.
And that, I think that's really a huge part of what it is for me. Aside from having my Star Trek family who I go to see every year, I've talked about this in other podcasts, but I'm in the Denver area. And so we have Denver Comic Con and Starfest. Starfest is a smaller fan run convention. Denver Comic Con is a huge, I assume corporate, I don't know who actually runs it. I want to say it's Pop Culture in the Classroom, which is a nonprofit. But anyway, Denver Comic Con, obviously, both of these conventions really are multi-genre conventions. Starfest originated focusing on Star Trek and has since kind of expanded. And they still focus on having Star Trek actors, but it's people I've seen. It's this year was Nana Visitor and Renee Auberjonois, and I think maybe Walter Koenig is the third Star Trek person. So I've seen these people. So that's not really a draw for me. I go to the conventions, and, you know, Starfest for me is like a half-day convention, although it's actually a three-day convention. And then Denver Comic Con is way too many people. I could not deal with it. I really wanted to see some of the Star Trek Continues stuff last year, and I was there for an hour and I had to leave.
Yeah.
But it's really the fact that they are so focused. I felt kind of out of place, and I didn't even do a Star Trek cosplay at Denver Comic Con. I did, it was during June, so during Pride Month, and I did basically an equality Supergirl type thing. And so I was a comic focused person, but I felt very out of place, and I think that only added to my anxiety and made it worse. Whereas STLV, it's like I'm in my place with my people. I know where I'm going. I know the drills. So it's just like it's second nature to go to that convention. But the fact that it's really all Star Trek people is just a huge part of why I go every year.
I'll echo your comments too, Heather, by the way, but I stopped going to New York Comic Con as well years ago for the same exact reasons. It's so big and so crowded and so hectic, and it's just so spread out over a bunch of different buildings now, and it's so confusing, and it just gets to be too much to handle. Maybe it's because I'm getting older or something, I don't know, but it just so many people, and it just feels like you're waiting in lines to go wait in more lines, and it's just too frustrating for me, especially after getting so into STLV and knowing how that convention runs and how much fun we all have there. I can't help but compare them in my mind and say, yeah, it's just not worth it for me to go and deal with all that stress when I'm going to go to STLV this year anyway.
But I think what speaks of this for Jeff and I, we're both big Disney nerds. We love Disney.
Yes.
And so we can go to Disney and wait in lines to wait in lines.
Yeah.
And deal with massive amounts of people. I mean, given that's a, you know, larger, you're more spread out. But I think because of like the passion that we have as Disney people, and then the passion that we have for Star Trek and STLV, which seems to be I don't know that contagious is the right word, but most of my friends that go to this convention annually, they fall into the same rabbit hole, I guess. They find these friends and they go back to see the friends. I mean, I know that for a lot of people, especially like the gold tier tickets, and we'll talk about the ticket breakdown here in a bit, but the gold ticket is the highest ticket that you can buy. It runs upwards, gosh, I think they're almost like $900 now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's about that much.
And so a lot of those people, I feel, are from my conversations with them, are the ones that are more focused on seeing the panels and seeing the stars. There are still people that, you know, come and find their Star Trek family. But I think that most of us, that we go and we make friends and we just keep going back for the friends. Because I found this experience and having my Star Trek family there, it's really meaningful when I hear this happen with other people. And it's not just that you have like a clique of friends. I mean, admittedly, Jeff and I kind of have our very tight-knit family of friends. And that's just that these are people that we've spent time with. We connect on an intimate level, and we share a very, you know, a bond. But even outside of, you know, that little circle of friends, we have wider and wider circles, whether it's our podcast family or just, you know, friends that we see every year that we keep in touch with on Facebook, you know, that we still care about because they're our friends and we have Star Trek in common. So the fact that people continue to share this experience, I think, is just what makes Star Trek Las Vegas just an exceptional convention, you know, despite any, the money grabbing that a lot of people feel, is part of that convention. I keep going back and I keep spending my money because I want to see my friends. So.
Yeah.
I want to go for the same reason. I mean, ever since I started this show, I mean, I've, my, my family of Star Trek friends has grown and grown and grown. I mean, I've got lots more people on my friends list since I started the show, meeting other podcasters, you guys, Trek geeks, you know, other other podcasters, even here locally. It's just like, it's such an amazing thing, you know, podcast family, you know, Star Trek family, all that kind of, you know, that friend network. It's huge. Yeah. And so many of you guys are all over the country. It'd just be great to get to a place where I can see everybody who I've been talking with for years, you know?
Yeah, there are people that go to this convention from all over the world. So that's another really great aspect, is that it's an international group of people. So you can, you know, meet someone. I'm in Colorado. I can meet someone from Japan. And that's what Roddenberry would have wanted, right? To bring all these people together this one thing. And, you know, for me, so I didn't really become a hardcore Trekkie until I started going to this convention. I grew up enjoying science fiction. I didn't grow up watching Star Trek. It wasn't until adulthood. I watched Enterprise as it aired, which unfortunately for women, you know, Enterprise isn't really the strongest Star Trek show for us. We don't have great female roles. I love T'Pol. I love Hoshi, but they're ultimately, it's just not the best Trek to bring women into, I'll say.
Which one would you say? Voyager?
So, you know, of course, you've got a female captain. So Voyager is great. But I think, you know, TNG is great, too. I mean, again, you know, I think Dr. Crusher is phenomenal. I liked Deanna Troi a lot. You know, these days, I feel that, you know, her character wasn't realized to its fullest capacity.
I don't think it was either.
Yeah, but so Enterprise, you know, I got through the first two seasons as it aired, and I kind of lost interest. I still watched it, but I kind of half-watched it.
It gets so much better after the first two seasons, though.
I know. Yeah, you know, I realize that now, but unfortunately for someone who wasn't, you know, a hardcore Trekkie, it was difficult to hold on to. You know, it was difficult to keep watching, especially as a woman, especially without strong female characters. Again, no offense to Paul and Hoshi, but it wasn't until, and I saw Nemesis was my first Star Trek film in the
theater.
I'm
so sorry.
So I know, but listen, guys. So Nemesis, okay, it's got Tom Hardy, even though he was a tiny baby. I love Tom Hardy, and I loved him even then. Regardless of whether the movie was good or not, it's still my first Trek in a theater, so it holds that little nostalgic soft spot for me. Anyway, it was not until the J.J. Abrams 2009 movie that came out, and I liked it. I didn't have high expectations of the first film. I thought it was fun, and I was like, wow, it would be really cool to just go to a Star Trek convention, like only Star Trek. So, you know, did a Google search, found this creation, Star Trek Las Vegas convention, and I was, you know, in Colorado by that time, so it was a quick flight down, and it was just such an awesome experience to be around all these Star Trek people. And even then, I could look at the fans and I could see, oh, well, those, they're all friends. Like, that's a group of friends, and those people over there are a group of friends. So I could see these little, like, Trek family elements already. And I was like, I want that. I want those Star Trek friends.
Oh, for sure.
You know, 9 years later, one of those people, especially my friend Sue, I remember seeing her and her friend Stacy at that first convention, and I was like, oh, they look so beautiful in their Star Trek cosplay. I want to be their friends. And now Sue is one of my best friends. So it was going every year. You know, I went through a divorce. I went by myself. That was great. It helped me branch out and make more friends. I've continued to go. I've continued to make this my little Star Trek family bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's really these going to this convention, meeting these people, that's where my Star Trek fandom like really took off. And I hope that happens for other people who may not be hardcore Trekkies by the time they go to that convention, but it's so immersive and it's Star Trek everywhere. And you're talking about all these different series and maybe you haven't seen, you know, Star Trek Enterprise, but then when you leave, you want to go watch it. Like you want to watch it all.
Yeah. Especially because I'm sure you'll meet people who's, you know, everyone different will have a different favorite show. And then you make friends with these people like, oh, I want to see this. I don't see why they like it.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, after some thought, I've realized that, you know, Star Trek has changed my life, not just a personal level of connecting with the morals and the meanings in Star Trek and the hope and the optimism, but the fans. I mean, I have met so many amazing people that despite the con depression that you get when you leave, you leave having these wonderful individuals in your life that are hopeful and positive, optimistic people. You know, we're all human. We all experience life. So we have ups and downs, but we stick together through that. And it's just these Star Trek fans are a large part of what makes my life worth living. That's silly to say, I guess, but it just speaks to how going to a convention like this really impacts your life. And it may not be the same for everyone. I think some people go and it's not what they expected and they never go back. But for me, it's the best antidepressant I've come across.
Oh, that's an awesome story. For similar to you, like the 2009 Star Trek movie kind of like re-got me into Star Trek. Like I've been a lifelong. My dad maybe watched Star Trek when I was an infant, and you know I watched it my entire life. But I just kind of fell off the bandwagon as far as like you know being excited about it because nothing had really happened in years.
Yeah.
And then the movie came out, and so I like binged watch TOS to get ready for the movie to see if there'd be any like clues and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I met, you know, a couple of years later, you know, I met a guy who's also into Star Trek and we started this podcast. And it's just like that movie was the beginning of my re-excitement into Star Trek. So, I mean, people hate JJ, but I'm like, I think he did good by making Star Trek exciting again.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It was the first Star Trek in what, like almost like 6-7 years?
Yeah, I have opinions about each of those films, and you know, I think everyone's opinions are valid. But even if you hate all of those movies, you have to recognize that not only did it revitalize Trek for fans like us, but it brought in so many new fans. That 2009 convention, they asked us, we were filled in the main auditorium, and they said, how many of you are coming to this convention for the first time? And it was like half of the auditorium.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I mean, so I am all for these movies. I think that Beyond is probably my favorite of the three.
Mine too.
Yeah, I adore that film. But so Star Trek Discovery, you know, it's the same thing. It's new Star Trek. And I think that they're going to do a great job of giving us a Trek that Trekkies will enjoy. But they're also making this to attract new people. And not just people who have seen the JJ films, but, you know, people that are just looking for something new, especially some new science fiction, because we don't have a lot of science fiction on TV right now.
That's true.
So this is going to bring in people who may have never even watched Star Trek. And, you know, with most of those people, once they find out that there's more Star Trek, they go and they watch the rest of it. And I think that CBS All Access is going to have all of the shows on CBS All Access, too, so that not only can you watch Discovery, you can go watch the rest of the Star Trek catalog.
Well, I'm interested on your take on this, because, I mean, that's the expectation for Star Trek Discovery to bring in a whole bunch of new fans. But mm-hmm. what do you think that paywall is going to do to that? Because, I mean, like, I mean, I know it's probably just a vocal minority, but even Star Trek fans are like, oh, I don't want to pay $5 to watch Star Trek Discovery. I'm like, I'm like, come on. But, I mean, that first episode on CBS has got to be, like, amazing, and they've got to market it to death to get non-Trekkies into it, I would imagine.
It's hard to predict, I think. I think it's really hard to predict. We've talked through this so many times on our own podcasts and with our own friends, and I think we're all in agreement that as far as we're concerned, the cost is not a factor. But I guess you really do have to recognize the fact that other people wouldn't agree with that, and it could wind up being an impediment. And, you know, we also had a couple of other discussions around the fact that CBS All Access isn't available on every single platform at this point. So you need certain devices to be able to watch it, namely either a computer or an Apple or an Android device. You can't watch it with your DVD player or your smart television.
You can do it on your PlayStation, though.
Yeah, there are barriers. Well, you have to own a special device then. So, you know, there's barriers of entry that I think are going to be impediments to it without a doubt. I mean, I think cost may be one of the least, the lowest barriers of entry for people to get past. I think a technological barrier is also an issue.
Yeah, my understanding is that, so like Showtime just released Twin Peaks, right? Mm-hmm. They broke records with the number of people who signed up for the Showtime, whether it was Showtime on your TV or Showtime app. I think it was actually their app. They broke records doing that. And I would like to think that will happen with Star Trek. I mean, I ultimately don't think that it's the best way to release Star Trek, but I completely understand why they're doing it. Star Trek has always been used to pioneer new technology, and this is kind of the way that TV is going. You know, I get Netflix. I think we still pay for Hulu on top of having cable. Netflix, you know, I think all of us wish that they would have just put it on Netflix because we already have Netflix,
yes.
But CBS is trying to build their own platform. And so I do understand why, you know, I understand why they're doing it. I understand why they're using Star Trek to do it. I hope that the people who want to see Star Trek succeed will support Star Trek. I know that a lot of people won't do it because they don't feel that they should be manipulated into paying $6 or $10 a month. And that's understandable. I respect those opinions, but ultimately for me, I want to see Star Trek survive. I already pay $10 for Netflix. I already pay $10 for Hulu. Paying another $10 for Star Trek it's a no-brainer for me. Of course, I'm going to do it.
I mean, same here. It's not going to break the bank. But, I mean, my point was more so for new people, for people who aren't in the Star Trek, because I just don't see non-Trekkies buying into this unless that first episode just blows everyone's mind.
It could be people that already have CBS All Access. I mean, there are users out there because the Good Wife spinoff, whatever it's called, The Good Life or something, it's been successful, and it's been successful on CBS All Access. So there is an audience already. Obviously, it's not going to be as big as if it were on cable. I would hope that, you know, we have this first, the pilot that gets aired. From what I've seen with the trailer for the show, I was blown away.
It looks like a movie.
Yeah, the quality of production is just more than I was expecting. So based on that, I think it's going to attract some new viewers. And then I think as the show goes on and people are watching and talking about it, assuming that it's a good show, I would hope that word of mouth would also attract some more newbies. I think that there is some impediment. Is that the right word? Impediment to building the fan base being on something like this, even versus Netflix, because there are plenty of non-Trekkies who have Netflix. But
or Showtime, even. They own Showtime.
Or Showtime. I think ultimately I just try to be positive and optimistic and hope that the reputation of the show will build enough that it will attract new people.
Oh yeah, I definitely hope so too. I mean, I really hope so. But I just wanted your take on how do you think they're going to get new people, because I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, well, don't forget, there's also an advantage to people who are outside the U.S. because it will be on Netflix.
For everyone else except for U.S. and Canada.
Right, so everybody who has a Netflix account out there has a much better chance of attracting new people because it's a part of something they're already paying for. So, you know, we can probably hope to pick up some new fans, you know, in other countries. I know some of our U.K. friends are very happy about the current existing promotional materials that are on Netflix for Discovery in their country. So we've heard all about them, and we're quite envious of that.
So should we talk a little bit about this commission?
Star Trek Las Vegas on a budget there.
On a budget. So I failed to mention earlier. So this year's convention is August 2nd through 6th. It's at the Rio in Las Vegas. The Rio is an off-strip casino. It's not really that old. I think I just found out this week it's only like 15 years old. I will warn everyone, it's certainly no Caesar's Palace or Bellagio. However, it's not like the worst casino ever either.
Better or worse than the Hilton?
Better.
I would probably say... I would say on par with or better. I was only at the Hilton 2 years, trying to think about like room quality and stuff. I think it was about pretty much the same. But I had a big room at the Hilton. The nice thing about the Rio is that all of their rooms are suites. So,
oh, wow.
They're I can't remember what the square footage is, but it's basically, you know, your king size bed or two queen size beds, and then you have a couch with a coffee table and a desk and a TV and a mini fridge.
I mean, at the Hilton, I mean, it was a really big room. I mean, the hallways were sketchy. Like, it looked like it was like some kind of dark alley going down the hallway, because they were renovating and the lights weren't all on and the wallpaper was ripped off. It was kind of scary, but the rooms, they were big. I mean, it was like half as big as my
that's
apartment.
Kind of what I remember, but I know at that time, like, my ex-husband he flew a lot, so he had points, and I think we were in some special room, but the room there was pretty big. So if that's true, and most of the rooms at the Hilton were pretty big, then this is on par with them. I have a secret that I guess is really no longer a secret. I've already mentioned it on our podcast, but there are two towers at the Rio for you to stay in. There's the Masquerade Tower and there's the Ipanema Tower. Ipanema Tower is a bit newer and it's closer to the convention hall. If you stay in Ipanema Tower, which is where I like to stay, you don't have to go through, you kind of outskirt the casino floor. For people that haven't been to the Rio, haven't been to Las Vegas, almost every casino in Las Vegas allows smoking on the casino floor. The nice part about Ipanema is that you can kind of just skirt along the outside of the casino, and the exposure to that smoke is not as bad as if you were staying in the Masquerade Tower, which is the larger tower. It's been slowly renovated over the years. I think some of the rooms are still not renovated. Those seem to be mostly smoking rooms. So the nice thing with that tower is that you're closer to a lot of the restaurants. It's kind of hidden in the casino. Well, not, that sounds weird to say, it's hidden in the casino floor. It's like off of the casino, basically, right, Jeff? That's how you would say it.
Yeah, definitely.
And so that has, what, like 8 elevators to get to all of the rooms?
Yeah. There's a whole bank of elevators there.
Suite of elevators.
I think Masquerade might... Well, I think it's really one tower, but it's kind of split into two, where there's a section of elevators that only go so far up, and then the other side goes higher.
Exactly. Yep. It's exactly how it works. So, and you know, just to throw this out there too, now that you know the Ipanema Tower, as Heather was saying, is closer to the convention floor, but the advantage of the Masquerade Tower is it's closer to where all the nightlife is. So, if you are a bar person and you like hanging out at night, which a lot of people at STLV do. It's the elevators are literally right next to that bar where everybody hangs out. So it's much easier to get to your room from the party area if you're staying in the Masquerade Tower. So there's advantages to both towers, depending on what your preference is.
So if you want to get hammered, don't go to the Ipanema Tower.
Yeah, it's a long walk.
It's not that bad of a walk. But
if you're hammered, it is.
When you're hammered, it gets so much worse.
Yes, if you're going to stagger to your room. That is certainly the one to stay at. Okay. Mm-hmm. So as far as the Rio goes, Creation has worked out a discount code with the Rio. At this point, we are 38 days, according to my countdown, from the convention. I think at this point, there are still rooms available at the Rio at the discount code. My advice is to always book like the month after the convention is over. As soon as they put up the dates for next year, if you know that you're going, go ahead and book those because they will go up once the first block sells out. Typically, they will negotiate for a second block, and then they will increase the price of those rooms. So yep. Right now, they have discount code will go from, it looks like, Sunday, July 30th, all the way through Wednesday, July 9th. And it looks like on weekdays, so Sunday through Thursday, it's around $75 a night. And then, well, their website actually has two rates for Thursday, $95. And then the weekend goes all the way up to $155. So it's still expensive. That's where it gets difficult. The Gold Coast Casino is right next door to the Rio. They are about half the price of the Rio. I've stayed there once in 2012, and my understanding is that they've actually renovated that casino since, so the rooms might be even nicer. When I stayed in 2012, I found the room comparable to the Rio. The room was not as big, and the bathroom wasn't as nice, but for a room that you don't spend a lot of time in, it was certainly acceptable. The only caveat to staying at the Gold Coast is the walk.
Yep.
You do have to walk. Gosh. So a lot of people want to tell you that it's not a bad walk and it's not terrible, but you do have to go, you know, outside, like through their parking garage, cross a street, go through the Rio parking lot. You come in the opposite side of the Rio. So you come in like kind of by the buffet and you have to walk all the way down to the convention hall. I would say that,
and mind you, it's over 100 something degrees outside.
Yeah. So
yeah.
If you're in cosplay, some kind of a uniform, that walk, you know, August brutal. Or Vegas in August, the temperature certainly can be around 100, if not higher, especially including the feels like, you know, it may be 96, but it feels like 112. So for me personally, it's not something that I want to ever do again. If you don't mind the walk, if you can deal with the heat, then I would say
if you're not painted green or blue.
Yeah, yeah, you might melt. I would say it's a solid, like, at least 20-minute walk from your room at the Gold Coast down to the convention center of the Rio. Again, like, the rooms are going around $45 for a weeknight, and then the weekend is $94 versus close to double that for the Rio. So it's certainly a good way to spend money. We also, so Jeff and I both admin a Facebook group that's the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas Facebook group. And someone in that group, Missy Kilgore, actually negotiated a separate rate with the Gold Coast. I don't have the prices for her rooms right now, but I think they're comparable with Creation or maybe slightly less than Creation. So the only thing there is you have to join our group and find the post to get that discount.
So with the Gold Sun being half the price of the Rio, is that the standard price of the Rio or is that the discounted price of the Rio?
The discounted price. The Rio is just expensive. I think it's probably too expensive.
Yeah, for what it is, definitely.
For what it is. But I have fibromyalgia. So that's a neuromuscular pain disorder. Technically, it's a disability. Jeff can attest to the fact that every year I go and every year I wind up in some kind of pain issue, whether it's I'm not getting enough sleep, I'm doing too much, whatever. So for me, I need the accessibility of being able to just shoot up to my room and lay down for a little bit. For people that aren't like me, it's just nice to be able, like, if you've got to change your outfit, like you're doing various cosplay, you can run up to your room and change it. You bought something in the vendor's room, you can run up to your room and drop it off.
I have to carry it around. Yeah. So staying in the hotel is definitely perkier.
Yes. And with the bar, like there's nightlife, you know, there are events hosted by Creation, like the karaoke, there are parties for certain levels of tickets. But even just us regular GA people, there's bar life. And so you're hanging out with your friends at the bar, like I said, until the wee hours of the morning. And I don't want to walk across, you know, the street at 3 a.m. Given that you can usually find people to walk with you. And I always advise that to everyone, because Gold Coast, you have to walk through their parking garage. And maybe it's just that I'm a woman, and so I'm very cognizant of stuff like that. But I, even just walking to my room at the Rio, I prefer not to walk alone. But ultimately, I find that the convenience of the Rio offsets the additional cost. And there's one really great thing you can do to save on that money, and that is to find a roommate, or yep, two, or three. I went by myself in 2013, and I had a room by myself, and I was waiting in line to check in, and lo and behold, I wind up meeting my Trekkie bestie, Claire Little, and we now share a room. So now we split that cost in half, and I know people, because a lot of us don't spend a lot of time in the room. Mm-hmm. They're doing cosplay, they're running around, so they share their room. Usually like four people to a room. If you don't mind sleeping with someone else. So the standard room will have two beds, and they're like, I think, double or queen size beds. And then you can request a cot or two.
And the couches.
And there's a couch, and some of the couches might even have pull out beds. So it's definitely doable. It just, again, comes down to your personal preference. I'm not a person who wants to have three roommates.
No.
So for me, it's not something I'd want to do, but for many people, it knocks down the cost of your room to a quarter of what you would pay, and you still get the convenience of being at the Rio.
So plan parties is what you're saying. If you can stand, if you can stand changing with other people in the same room.
Yeah. We have a roommate thread in our unofficial STLV group on Facebook.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we do that every year, and we just have, you know, one spot where people can go and ask for roommates. And I always say, if you're not sure about a roommate, maybe ask them for some personal references. I know that might be awkward, but ultimately you want to protect yourself, right?
Yep.
I think most of the people in our group are perfectly safe people to room with. But again, it just really comes down to what someone's personal preferences are. We've found that thread to be helpful in connecting people. I think we've had success so far.
That's
so
really awesome, yeah, that y'all run the unofficial group for that, so you can like help people out. That's really awesome.
Yeah, the
group is a fantastic resource for that stuff.
I have to just humble brag here for a moment. The official creation group on Facebook has like 14,000 people. We have under 4,000, and our group is way more active and helpful and insightful than the official creation.
And you let guys post their podcasts, so thank you for that.
We do. It's, you know, so it's, the group is really focused. I didn't create the group. My friend Sarah Rules created the group. I think it was just because at the time the official creation page was and still is pretty heavily moderated. Like, they will just go and delete comments willy-nilly sometimes. Like, if you disagree with creation at all, or you say anything bad about creation, your comment doesn't last. So at the time, Sarah made the group, and she hasn't been for a few years. The great thing is that she'll be there this year with us, but she eventually stepped back from admitting the group and asked me to do it probably three or four years ago. I've been through a couple co-moderators, and then it just only seemed natural. I needed someone that I could trust. And so I brought Jeff on, and then we brought on our friend Jesse to help with moderation. We do moderate like who comes into the group. We make sure that they're actual Star Trek fans. Otherwise, you get a lot of spammers and just strange people.
So many spammers.
And we do moderate the post just because we don't need a day. Like, I'm trying to think of, oh gosh, I hate to even mention it on the podcast. I will, because I'd like to address it. So the Rio made the news a couple weeks ago because two people were found to have had Legionnaire's disease. this, I'll talk about that in a second, but I think we got 10 different people posting about Legionnaire's disease,
yeah, exactly.
The same article in the group. So we moderate the post just so that we don't get a day when there are 10 different posts about the same subject.
Yeah.
But we're pretty relaxed. So the point of posting, allowing people's podcasts, even though it's an STLV group, we do allow some non-STLV related topics. As long as it's Star Trek and as long as it's not offensive, we pretty much allow everything.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you and happy to grow. You know, as podcasters ourselves, we understand the desire for exposure, and you're in a Star Trek group, so it's the best place to find new listeners. Very quickly, back to this Legionnaires thing. So Legionnaires is a type of pneumonia. Most people have no symptoms of it. It is contracted by, so it's basically spread through the water system, and it's contracted through like the mist off of water. So it could be.
And there's a lot of misters in Las Vegas. Yeah.
Well, there's not in the Rio, but there are showers and there's, you know, water in your sink. And so that's, I think at the Rio, the most likely way people contracted it was through just taking a shower. Like I said, I've been going to the Rio since the convention moved there in 2011. And fortunately for me, I've never gotten sick. Like I said, Legionnaires, most people don't contract this. It's pretty rare that you do. And a lot of time it's people whose immune systems are already compromised. I know that because this made news, the Rio is being proactive and doing what they can. I think we're still waiting on the news of what they're doing. My understanding is that they need to disinfect like their air conditioning, like their water cooling system and however they'd store their water. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know about that kind of stuff. But yeah. My belief is that since this made national news, and I mean, it was all over the place, that the Rio is going to be responsible as they have to do to adhere to health codes in Las Vegas. I expect that by the time the convention is here, if not that they've already done it, they're taking every precaution, to get rid of this. I will say a lot of people get sick after the convention or at the convention, and it's not Legionnaires, it's just con crud. And that's because, you know, if I spend $3,000 to go to a convention and I get a cold beforehand, I'm still going to the convention.
You got that right.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not quite like you're sick and, you know, you miss a day of work not to infect other people. It's certainly unfortunate, but at the same time, you know, I don't expect someone who spent so much money to not go to this convention because they're sick. When you're in an environment with circulated air, whether it's an airplane or a hotel, when you are not drinking enough water, when you are not eating well, you're not sleeping, you are running, you know, every day back and forth, you're putting your body at a disadvantage.
You're just more susceptible.
Susceptible to getting sick. And so a couple years ago, yes, a lot of people got very sick. Some of them had pneumonia. A couple people in the group actually said, yeah, they were diagnosed with this Legionnaires. And that's certainly possible, but I don't think that anyone needs to go into panic mode about this. I think that doing what you can to prevent being sick and run down in the first place is the best approach to this.
Lots of Purell.
Yeah, it's you know, doing what you can to stay hydrated, to sleep, to eat well, and to not run yourself down. But if you get sick after the convention, it's very likely not going to be this. Legionnaires.
And the thing is, just, you know, for people who don't go to a lot of conventions or may not be familiar, like going to a con, I mean, chances are moderate that you're going to get sick afterwards. I mean, like for me, it's been like a 50-50 thing. Like, half the time I go to a con, I get sick right after. And it's just you're meeting people, you're shaking hands, you're talking to people in close proximity. You know, it's just – and you're running around, and you're definitely not drinking or eating as much as you should, A, because the con food and drinks are so expensive, and B, you just don't think about it.
Yeah, you don't think about it. It's like the con diet.
And see, you're drinking booze. So.
Yes, yeah. And not enough water. And it's just, again, it's just that you're running yourself ragged, and that makes you more susceptible to becoming ill. But, you know, I got to say, I went to Disney last spring, and I was at the airport. I'm walking out of the coffee shop. This kid comes up and sneezes on me. Mm-hmm. Okay,
bye.
By day four of Disney, I had the most terrible head cold, you know, to the point that I had vertigo because of, you know, my ears and everything being clogged up. So you can get sick at any point. I don't think that this is any means to panic. I think that if your immune system is already compromised to a point that this is a concern, I would certainly just stay somewhere else, stay at the Gold Coast if you need to. You know, just take preventative actions. If I knew that getting sick was going to compromise me in a bad way, I probably would just stay somewhere else and maybe limit my time at the con, limit my exposure to people as best I could.
Yeah. Now, to tie this back really quick to the STLV on a budget topic, I just want to throw this out there that, you know, a little bit of preventative care, spending a little bit up front and take care of yourself a little bit to make sure that or in an effort not to get sick, can save you money in the long run, too, by not having to do doctor visits when you get back, potentially not missing out on days of work from being sick when you get back. So, you know, you may think, well, you know, buying vitamin C tablets and spending a little extra, make sure I'm eating enough food and water might sound like I'm putting up more money up front. But when you get back, you could be putting out a lot of money for doctor visits, prescriptions, and, of course, lost time at work, which none of us want to do because that's where all of our money comes from in the first place, right?
Exactly.
Yep. Okay, so are we good to move on to talking about convention tickets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I did this breakdown in our unofficial group. It's in our files section, and I'm just going to kind of refer people to go check that out. I think it's like ticket tiers or something, because it basically breaks down the different ticket levels and then the advantages that come with those tickets. I'm not going to go over all that because it could take a long time. but basically, the quick breakdown is that the highest level of ticket is the gold ticket. It's the most expensive ticket. It's the best seat in the house. So it's front and center. Like I said, it's around $900. And right now they're sold out on Creation's page. They're doing some auctions, and I'll give you a hint on how to save money here on these tickets in a minute. But that's certainly the highest one. You get a bunch of free autographs with that. Like I said, the best seat in the house. You have a special party that they throw. You get a lanyard and a special gold coin. You get a small discount card for the vendor's room. So there's a lot there. It's not the ticket for me because I'm not a big autograph person. I think if you've never done it and you've got the money to do it, certainly go ahead and splurge on it because it, you know, could be a great thing for you. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's a little bit too much money for how I experience the convention. The next level down from that is the captain's chair ticket.
Seems like it should be the highest tier, the captain's chair.
You would think. I don't know. Like gold is just, I don't know. But
Latinum should be the highest.
Yes, Latinum, because gold is worthless.
We need to recommend they change
it's just the title worthless of that, gold.
That tier. So captain's chair, I think I'll pull up really quickly. I know that those are also sold out directly from Creation, and let's see. For that one, the price. So actually, that one was $849. So it's close to the ticket prices go up every year, unfortunately. Yeah. The nice benefit with the gold and the captain's chair tickets. So quick interruption here. The gold ticket was at $929. So $929 and then $849. Yeah. The advantage to these is that you can renew your seat at a lower price every year. So
So if it's something, it's a big buy-in, and then you can slowly get it.
Yeah, it's like a timeshare. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. It really is.
Can you share the ticket with somebody?
No, you can't share tickets, unfortunately. The captain's chair ticket is basically the same advantages as the gold ticket, except that you don't get the free autographs with that one. I've done captain's chair 2 different years. I was able to get a discounted ticket because we bought a huge block of tickets with a group of friends. And I will say I enjoyed it. Jeff, you did captain's chair too, right?
No, I never did captain's chair. I did the highest I ever did was copper. That was my first year, and then I backed off.
Did you sneak into the party, the 5-year mission? Did we sneak you into that?
Well, I've been friends with the band for quite a few years now, and that one year that we were all together and they were playing the party, they got us into the party as kind of like friends of the band, helpers of the band, roadies. So they kind of had us carry some of their gear up to the party, and we wound up being able to stay, which was nice.
Well, that's cool. So I remembered you were at that party, so that's why I thought you had that ticket. But so it's, again, you have better seating. It's still front and center. It's just behind the gold seats. So it's definitely a nice advantage to be a little bit closer to the stage, and you can see people better without having to just refer to the screens that they have. But you have your own special party. So there's one night for gold, and then there's one night for captain's chair. And the thing I didn't mention earlier, those parties have a free meal. It's at the Voodoo Lounge. So it's all the way at the top of the Rio. You have a great view of the strip. These parties are highly populated, and it's very difficult to find a seat if you show up on time. So my recommendation for these parties is to show up early. I think it's listed that they don't start until like 7 or 8 p.m. But when I show up at those times, I can never find anywhere to sit and eat my food. So my recommendation is to show up early. The Voodoo Lounge is 2 stories. So that bottom story has most of the sit-down tables. And then the top story is more of a lounge.
Yep.
And then there's an outdoor area. And I think I've eaten out there several times now. The food, it's like a prime rib, not buffet, but like they have prime rib. I think they've got some vegetarian options. There's mashed potatoes, lots of food. I thought the food was good, but again, the dining experience is not the best ever. And then they have entertainment, which is usually a Star Trek actor's band or just a Star Trek actor or like the house band who past couple years, well, 2 of the last 3 years has been 5-year mission. This year it is Gary Graham's band, which it's like Sons of Khan or something. I can't remember what their name is. Look really quick. I've never heard Gary Graham's band before.
I didn't even know he had a band.
It doesn't have it. I know that they're the house band, and I think they're also the entertainment. Looking at the website, they haven't actually confirmed, unless I'm just not looking at the right place. Anyway, it's nice because it's Star Trek centric entertainment. I had a lot of fun when it was 5-year mission because I'm a fan of that band. They're friends of ours, and it's a kind of music that I enjoy versus others. I think Enterprise Blues Brothers were there in 2014, and they were pretty fun to listen to as well. So that's neat, and it's nice to be up at the top of the Rio and see the view and everything.
Oh, that's got to be gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's great,
especially at night.
You feel special because you're at a special party just for these ticket holders, and it's a unique experience. They do offer some a la carte tickets to these parties that are like $200 each. And at this point, they're close to being sold out. I would not recommend buying those tickets. My advice is that if you're not on a budget and you've got money to spend, go ahead and buy one of these more expensive tickets where these parties are included, instead of buying a la carte tickets. There are 2 more levels of tickets below this. I get confused because they kind of changed them around year to year. We've had a Commander's version before, which is no longer. What we have now is Copper Admission. So again, decent seating, not the best seating. All of these seats are reserved seats, by the way, for Gold, Captain's Chair, and Copper. So it's your seat for the entire convention. With the Copper, you basically get your reserved seat. All of these, you get the lanyard, you get this limited edition gold coin to keep. With the Copper, you get admission to the Saturday Night Gala, which is a concert this year. It's the Next Generation's composer, Ron Jones. I think it's got the orchestra with him, of course. And then a bunch of different Star Trek actors. So Jimmy Darren, Walter Koenig, Bob Picardo, Tim Russ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are all performing. So that's included with Gold, Captain's Chair, Copper. And then general admission can still buy a ticket to the Saturday Night Gala. It's just like an extra $30 to attend that. But they change up the entertainment year to year. I think the last couple years it was the Nevada Pops doing Star Trek music, which is great. It's a lot of fun, but they had done that, I think, 2 years in a row and had it previously. So I'm glad that they're switching it up to something else this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the advantage for that ticket. Then we get to general admission. There's a general admission weekend, which they're still available. Those tickets are $330. And actually, now that I'm looking at it, there are still some commander tickets available as well. Those are $479. General admission is admission to all 5 days. There's no reserved seat for this one. You don't get entry into any of the special parties. This is the ticket that I go with these days because, like I said, I find my entertainment at the bar in the evenings. I don't mind not having a reserved seat because I like to come and go. I don't go to a ton of panels anymore. And quite frankly, over the years, they've upgraded their audio visual. So I find that I can hear people very well. And they have these very large screens throughout the main convention room. And I can see the people on the screens. So for me...
Yep. They do good camera work.
Yeah. That's it. When they have people up asking questions, like they'll try to pan over to the person asking the question so you can see them. In the past, it wasn't so great, but like I said, they've really worked hard to upgrade that system. And so it's perfectly acceptable for me.
Yeah. So quick extra side point, just to make sure everybody is clear on this. Yeah, the general admission weekend is also the one that I prefer now. It's the one I've gone with every year since I downgraded from Copper. But you do not get a reserve seat, but you are still guaranteed a seat in the auditorium. So you won't be, you know, from halfway up or towards the front. You'll be in the back, but there's going to be a seat for you when you get there if you have a general admission ticket. And as Heather was saying, there's humongous screens hanging from the ceiling on either side going all the way up. So I think there's four or five now, or three or four on each side of the seating area going towards. So you'll always be able to actually see. I mean, the people on the stage may look tiny from where you're sitting, but you'll still be able to see them and hear them just fine thanks to those screens. So don't think you're going to get boxed out if you don't have a guaranteed reserved seat because you didn't go with one of the higher ticket plans. You will still get a seat.
Yeah, that's a nice thing that Creation does that most other conventions don't do, is guarantee that you have a seat for every panel.
That is so really nice.
Main theater only, though. Not the secondary theater is not guaranteed, just the main theater.
It's little. Secondary theater is pretty small. But honestly, I've never not been able to find a seat there. Yep. And if there's not a seat, there's standing room. So that works out well. They do sell general admission as single day tickets as well. That's around $65, $70 a day. They also sell GA preferred, which is reserved admission. They used to have like a general admission preferred reserved seating ticket, and they kind of got rid of that for a 5 day pass, but they do sell them individually. They're a little bit more expensive, around $70, $85 a ticket for those. So all the tickets are pretty expensive.
They are.
They are. They do sound kind of pricey.
They are certainly pricey. Here's the nice thing. So last year, the 50th anniversary convention sold out like months, like 6 months before the actual convention. So what we did within our unofficial STLV group was make an offshoot group. So it's STLV buy/sale group on Facebook. And those are basically secondhand tickets from, you know, people who bought the tickets but are not going to be able to go to the convention. We had closed the group after last year. We reopened it due to requests from the group this year. And right now, there are tickets of all levels available in that group at discounted prices. So I'm hoping that people reference this for next year. It will be the same situation. It seems like there are always people who buy tickets and then plans change and they can't go. I know that one person just sold a bunch of 5-day GA passes that are normally $330 for $250. Wow, so it's a really great way to save on your ticket. The only thing is that it's a caveat emptor, you know, use at your own risk group.
Yep.
We do our best again to moderate that group, moderate admission to the group, so that it's people that are already in our unofficial group, or you can tell that they're Star Trek fans, so they may be interested in coming. But we certainly recommend just using something like PayPal, goods and services, to send money, because that will protect your purchase. You can always ask for personal references from someone, but it isn't at your own risk group. The way that creation tickets work is that they have a barcode on them. You take your ticket. When you register, your barcode gets scanned, and that is the owner of the ticket. So if someone were to duplicate the ticket, you could have 5 tickets with the same barcode. Whoever gets there first gets the ticket. Everyone else gets turned away.
We've seen this happen too, by the way. This is not just conjecture. No.
Well, we haven't seen it within this group.
Not within this group, but we've seen this happen before to people.
But apparently other people it's happened to. So again, we just advise that people use caution, check for references. It's not the best way to buy a ticket, but it's certainly less expensive. And at least for last year was the only way you could really get a ticket outside of paying even more via one of Creation's auctions.
Yeah. So I'll throw out one more quick bit of advice about ticket buying and maybe trying to find a way to get a ticket a little bit cheaper. This will do you absolutely no good this year in 2017. So this is advice for the future, for 2018 conventions and beyond. And just going by the last 2 years, this experience has held up. Now, Creation will release tickets at certain intervals after the convention. Usually Gold and Captain's Chair go on sale first, and then they'll release Copper a few months later. And then General Admission Weekend, which is the 5-day, the cheapest way you can get a 5-day pass that still allows you to do the early pre-registration the night before. This is the one that Heather and I and a lot of our friends go with. They'll usually go on sale. I hesitate to say a specific time, but usually around Christmas or January, those tickets will pop out. So and usually when they first show up, they'll be at the cheapest possible price that Creation will offer them for. And after the first wave of those tickets sell out, or after a week or so, they usually jack the price up a little. It happened the last 2 years in a row. So if you want to get in at the cheapest level that gets you an all 5-day pass, keep your eyes on that site and keep your eyes on our Facebook group, because somebody will inevitably post the second those tickets go on sale. And this year we were watching because we knew around the time where they were going to show up, and we got on, and sure enough, we got the tickets, and a week later, the ticket prices went up. So we were able to thankfully lock in for the cheapest possible price that we could. So if you're really looking to save money on these tickets and go on a budget, that's another really good way.
Check out the group. Watch.
Yeah, keep your eye on the group towards Christmas time, and somebody will tell you when the general admission weekends go on sale and buy them immediately.
Yeah,
so you're guaranteed that price.
I don't think any of us are fans of these price hikes.
No,
definitely We don't like to bash creation. We certainly appreciate that creation puts in all the hard work to bring this convention to us annually, but it kind of bites that they, you know, sell out of a ticket and then jack up the price the next day. Yep. It's, you know, not a great thing. So there are two other ways to get tickets I'll mention quickly. So last year they did not offer any discounted tickets via Groupon or Gold Star. However, they used to do so in the past, and right now, so we're mid, almost the end of June, they really should have popped up already, but they may still show up. So Groupon.com and GoldStar.com, Creation will sell them some tickets, usually just the weekend general admission, or just weekday.
Yeah, single days, sorry.
Yeah, single day general admission, usually about a 50% discount on the ticket cost. So those are by far the cheapest tickets that you can get. They're just not always guaranteed. A lot of people held out for them last year and they never came. So people wound up scrambling to find a ticket.
Yep. So roll the dice. Yeah, so roll the dice. We have no idea whether or not they're ever going to do them again. You know, I mean, these big anniversary years, you can say maybe there's a reason why, because it was the 50th of TOS last year and the 30th of TNG this year. They don't want to do that. Maybe in the future they'll go back to it, but still, it's a roll of the dice. If you want to wait to the last minute and hopefully they pop up, that's one way to go. But it will save you money, but just don't be surprised if they don't show up.
Yeah. And then the last way to get tickets is to win tickets. The past couple years, StarTrek.com has done a contest you can enter to win tickets. And this year, I have an insider tip from a friend of mine who's going to be giving away tickets via, I think it's a local Las Vegas radio station. So she will be posting in our group once that contest goes live. So keep an eye on the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas Convention Facebook group win those. Okay. Are we good? Was that everything with tickets, Jeff? Anything?
I think you nailed it. We did mention pre-registration a little bit for the right.
Right.
Yeah, for just certain a little packages.
Bit. Yeah, that's basically what general admission weekend and up.
Yeah, all the packages that include all 5 days of the con will come with pre-registration ability.
Yeah, pre-registration happens the day before. So generally, it's the evening before and starts around 6 o'clock. They do it. It's kind of timed release. So like 6 p.m. will be the gold people, and then 7 p.m. will be captain's chair. Last year, they did it during the afternoon.
So yeah, they started earlier.
Like early afternoon on Tuesday, you could go and do it. And then the biggest perk to pre-registration, aside from, you get your badge on your lanyard, you get your little packet with your program, is that you get access to the vendor's room the night before. So it's fun to get to see your friends.
Dibs.
Dibs of all the everything that's there. For me, I love the vendor's room. It's a room full of Star Trek things to spend your money on. our biggest thing we're friends with a lot of the vendors. We do some vendor-specific episodes so that they can talk about what they're bringing. Our friends like Danny Schwartz of Shop LLAP, Mickey Gunter of Make It So, our good friend Larry Nemechek, lots of friends in the vendor's room. So we wanted to get down there and see all those people. But last year, they had pre-registration in the afternoon, and then vendor's room access was in the evening. And for GA weekend, they had told us to come at something like 8 o'clock, I think. And we went down at 8 o'clock, and they're like, nope, come back at 10.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
A little bit of a fiasco.
Yeah, not well organized. And I think that night, the vendor's room actually closed at 10 or 11. And so it was like an hour before closing that we got to go down and see everyone. But that's, for me, that's a really fun perk of buying the GA weekend or above, is getting to do that pre-registration. Yep.
And it lets you skip the lines too, by the way, because if you pre-register, even with the general admission weekend, which is the cheapest all access pass for all 5 days, and you do the pre-registration, they'll give you a badge and a wristband. And every day you don't have to go and register again. You can just walk right into the convention hall and bypass the whole big line. And it saves you a ton of time. And even on a budget, time is still money. So it lets you get in there faster.
Yeah, I'll say this quickly and then we'll move on to some other topics. But you know, tickets are non-transferable. You can't buy a ticket for yourself and give it to your friend. What they will do when you pre-register or when you register daily is you get, number one, a wristband. So you have to have that wristband on to access the convention area. Security was a bit, they're trying to think of a, I guess it was just a, there was a higher level security last year with it being the 50th anniversary, and they didn't want people who didn't buy a ticket to sneak in. I don't condone sneaking in. But in the past, a lot of people have done what they call HallCon, which is where you just walk through the hallways and you don't get to go into any of the main rooms because all of those rooms have attendees looking for your wristband or your lanyard.
Yep.
Last year, they really cut back on even allowing people into the hallway. I assume the situation will be the same this year, but you do need to have a wristband to get access to the convention area, specifically the rooms.
Yeah, and that used to be a Creation staple, by the way, even at their smaller conventions like here in New Jersey. You could walk through all of the open areas without actually having to buy a ticket. And I think they've just recently started to change that, especially with all the security things that are going on. They want to make sure that, you know, we're safe. And, of course, they also want to make sure that we all have tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Must spend the money, people. So I think we're going to talk a little bit just about transportation really quick. Because we have a few tips on how to save money there. I think the biggest one is airfare. I'm lucky because I'm just in Denver. So my ticket, it's still not cheap. It's still around $250 for a 1 hour flight both ways. But that one, I don't have a lot of insight on saving on airfare aside from doing things like, you know, using your points. A lot of people get free airfare points using if they use their credit card. Or they're just frequent flyers, so you get points that way. That's how I used to go. I know you can open some credit cards with certain airlines, and they will give you a free flight somewhere. So that's an option. And then I fly Southwest when I go to Las Vegas, and Southwest like just did a sale where airfare was starting around $50 one way. I will say that the $50 flight took off at like 5 a.m.
Ouch. So,
yeah, it's not one that I would typically choose, but if you don't mind it, it's certainly a much cheaper way to get a flight to Vegas. Jeff, do you guys have any tips on airfare?
I do. I actually, as a guy who travels, I mean, I've been to Vegas, like I said before, I've been to Vegas so many times I've lost count, but I do travel quite a bit, and this does require effort. You know, and of course, all money saving usually requires some effort. But the method that I use, and I'd like to call it airline roulette, is, you know, start looking about 4 to 5 months out from when you're going. And not that you're going to buy right then, but look at the airlines that are flying from where you are to Las Vegas and note the prices. So go on. Usually the prices seem to fluctuate on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. They'll stay pretty consistent on other days. So go and look and start writing down the prices. You know, every couple of days, go search for your trip. Start writing down what the prices are, and you'll start to get over the course of a month or so, you'll start to see where the high points and the low points of the airline tickets are. So it's kind of like a roller coaster. You may see some prices that you think are absolutely insane. And then 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, you know, they're $100 cheaper or $150 cheaper, and then they'll go back up again. So once you feel like you've seen the range, when you get to about 2 months out, you know, 6 to 8 weeks out, as soon as you see that low price that you've seen before hit again, buy at that price because it's probably not going to go any lower. It takes a lot of effort to do this, but I've done this year after year after year with Las Vegas, and you'll wind up surprising. Usually from the East Coast here, my prices range about $480 to $520 round trip to Vegas, and that's kind of been creeping up and up and up over the years, but surprisingly, they'll be able to catch a price that's $50 or $60 lower just by doing this price watching scheme. And it actually works out. Like I said, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of time, but it will save you money.
That's interesting. I mean, just as a weird aside, like I just don't understand why it's so expensive to fly to Las Vegas, because it seems the year I went, there were so many flights going to Las Vegas and so many flights leaving Las Vegas that it should be one of the cheapest places to fly to in the entire United States.
One of the reasons for that, Dave, and this is kind of an airline thing, is that certain airlines have what they call a hub in certain air locations. Like for me, I think it was Continental. Continental United had a hub in Newark, New Jersey, and also one in Las Vegas. So direct flights from Newark to Las Vegas were cheaper because they were routing flights through, and they were those were points where people would transfer to get on another flight to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of on a leg that they're going to be going anyway. Out of Philadelphia, it was American Airlines for me that had a hub in Philadelphia and a hub in Vegas. So for me, the cheapest ways to fly there were flying Continental United out of Newark or American out of Philadelphia. And those were the prices that I would watch. The other airlines would always be much higher because it wasn't a, like what they call a hub to hub flight. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an out of the way flight for them. So you'd wind up having to connect through one of their hubs and somewhere else, you know, Houston, Texas, or, you know, Indianapolis, somewhere,
Atlanta,
or Chicago. Right. So you'd Atlanta, right. You'd have to catch. So direct flights would be cheaper from hub to hub. So you can Google that, Google your favorite airlines and find out which one has a hub at your local airport and which one has a hub in Vegas and watch those prices. Cause they'll probably be a lot cheaper.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So quickly, just once you're there, a lot of people drive also. I should not fail to mention that if you can drive, that's often cheaper, and it's great for bringing stuff from home like cookware or snacks or your giant Lego Man cosplay or something. but so once you're there, you're going from the airport to the Rio. There is no actual shuttle specifically for the Rio from the airport. So don't even think about that. My favorite way, the easiest way to get from the airport to the Rio is to just hop on a taxi. And again, I share a taxi with my friends. We do have another thread in the group that is for a cab share, ride share type of thing. So a taxi from the Rio to from the airport to the Rio is around $20, give or take, maybe $25 with tip. And so you can easily split that between three or four people.
There's no shuttle at all, not even a shared shuttle that goes to different casinos?
Yeah. There is one, and it is very cheap, but it stops at many different places, so it takes a long time to get where you want to go.
Oh, it's about $7 one way, so $14 round trip.
That's what I did when I went to the Hilton. It went to all these different hotels, which I didn't mind because I'm like, it's midnight, and I've never been to Las Vegas before, and it's nighttime. I get to see all the casinos. Well, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
that works.
Yeah. If it's not an issue to take some time to get there, certainly choose that option. A lot of people do. There's also Uber and Lyft, and I don't use either of those services, so I'm not educated about what those cost. My understanding is that it's cheaper than a taxi. Again, you can share an Uber or Lyft with someone else, so that's certainly an option. Jeff, do you want to talk about the probably not a budget saver?
Rental cars?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Las Vegas, they have a unique way, a unique venue for renting cars. Now, you can this is not to say that you can't get a cheap rental car, because rental car companies do offer some really good discounts. If you keep searching for coupon codes and things out there, they go to Retail Me Not, sites like that. Keep an eye on enterprise.com, budgetrentacar.com. You can score some really good deals on rental cars if you plan to go other places around Vegas. So if you're going just to the Rio and you plan on just staying there for the entire convention, that's one thing. You definitely probably don't need a rental car for that. But if you want to go out at night, drive around, you want to go to downtown Vegas, you want to go to
Pawn Stars shop.
You want to definitely get a rental car for that. My God, that's. Yeah, we actually talk about that on one of our STLV 101 podcasts, going to places like the Pawn Stars shop. Or you want to go out to some of the great national parks around Las Vegas. There's tons of beautiful places to go. Getting to those places by taxi or by other means that is not a rental car is quite expensive. So the value proposition of a rental car goes up if you're going to be traveling around Vegas to go to other places and see other places. So when you get to the airport at McCarran Airport in Las Vegas, there is a shuttle that'll take you to what they call the rental car center, which is maybe 10 minutes away from the airport, and all of the rental car companies are in one place. So wherever you're renting your car from, you don't have to worry about finding that kiosk at the airport. They'll take you by a shuttle bus to the rental car place where you can pick up your car and drive. So my advice to you guys out there is to search for discount codes or coupons mm-hmm. online. Some of them will give you a discount if you sign up for their membership, like you sign up for Enterprise Rent-A-Car, you know, membership program. They'll give you a discount you can use. And they're really, really good, and you can pick up your car right from there and drive to the Rio, and there's plenty of parking. There's a garage at the Rio you can park your car in. I highly recommend that you park on one of the floors that's covered in the garage so your car isn't blazing hot when you get into it when you go to leave the Rio, because it gets insanely hot out there. But, you know, it's a good value proposition if you plan to go out at night a lot, and not so good if you don't.
However, I would say, so right now parking at the Rio is free. And yep. Rio is one of the very few that has free parking. If you're going to go out to another casino in the evening, you're going to pay for parking. So in that case, and I don't think that the parking is cheap. I think it's at least like $15, $20.
Yeah, that's a recent change too, sadly.
Yeah.
They'll always be free.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to go to another casino, getting a rental car for stuff like that is not the best option. In the past, I was basically get to the airport, grab a taxi with Claire, hop over to the Rio, and then we really never leave the Rio for 5 days or whatever. But it's an option for people that definitely want to see more, and there are certainly ways to save on doing that. A quick aside, if people do want to venture onto the Strip, there is a shuttle. It's owned by Caesars or Harrah's Entertainment, whoever owns all those properties at this point. That is a free shuttle that will take you from the Rio over to the Strip. Someone mentioned it might take you to Caesars Palace. When I took it years ago, it took me near Bally's, and then you walk. So it's not super convenient, but it is free. It can get delayed at times. So mm-hmm. again, not my favorite way to get to places, but it is free. You cannot walk from the Rio to the Strip.
No. Okay.
You can, you do not want to,
no,
especially during the day, but even at night, it is hot in Las Vegas. It is a long walk over a very big highway.
Slightly dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. To get from the Rio to the Strip. So we do recommend taking a shuttle, a cab, Uber or Lyft, something like that, if you're going to leave the Rio.
Just for an idea, the one time I did go to Las Vegas, it was 100 degrees at midnight.
Yeah.
When my plane yep. landed. So, yep. I mean, that just think about that if you're going to think, oh, I'll just walk.
No.
No.
100 degrees at midnight. It's been dark for hours.
Aside from going between the Gold Coast and the Rio, like, that is the only walk that I could I don't recommend it, honestly, but that's the only acceptable,
tolerable walk.
Yeah. We had our friend John Krikorian on our first STLV 101 episode, and we had asked about the Palms, because the Palms is relatively close to the Rio, and he recommended that people do not do that walk even. I think the area is not a great area to want to walk at night anyway, but definitely just too far of a walk. Yeah. So I just wouldn't recommend that. But I think a lot of people just don't leave the Rio during the convention.
I mean, it makes sense.
It does. But you know, it's nice to get away at the same time. So there's certainly ways to save money on doing that. So we've got two more things to talk about. We'll try to do them quickly since we're going pretty long here, as we tend to do when we talk about this convention.
Yeah.
There's just so much to talk about.
There truly is. And hopefully all these tips are helpful and will help people prepare for next year, possibly this year. One thing we wanted to talk about was food and eating at the convention, because that, aside from buying your airfare and ticket, is the other place where you might spend a lot of money. I'm trying to think here where to start through all of this. I guess I'll just go down my bullet points. So a lot of people don't prefer to eat out every single time. The Rio has quite a few restaurants, different levels of restaurants. They've got stuff, you know, like Wetzel's Pretzels, which is, you know, not great food, pretzels, pretzels and soda, but relatively inexpensive, all the way up to something like the Voodoo Lounge, which you can go to in the evenings. And again, that's super expensive food. So they've got a range of places to eat. But not everyone wants to eat out for every meal. So what a lot of people do once they arrive in Vegas is grab a cab, an Uber, a Lyft, and hit one of the local grocery stores. We talked about this again in the first episode of STLV 101 with John Krikorian. He basically tells you all the types of groceries. He's a Las Vegas local. So he lists out all the different places that you can go to grab groceries. I will say the rooms at the Rio do have a mini fridge. When I stayed at the Gold Coast, I had to ask for a mini fridge. It may have been free of charge. It may have been like a $10 fee, but there was not a fridge in the room. You might call and just double check whether they've added them now or not, but there's no microwave. The Rio doesn't even have coffee pots in the room anymore. Nope. So,
Oh, wow.
Keep in mind, if you're going to go to a grocery and you've flown in, so you don't have a car with a cooler and all that, that you're limited on the space you have in your mini fridge, but you can buy things, you can buy dry goods, you can buy sandwich fixings. A lot of people do that. And we've got threads in our unofficial group with ideas of, you know, stuff that you can buy, stuff that you can bring. My second note here, make sure that whether you're at the Rio or the Gold Coast or really any casino, that you get their total rewards card or whatever it's called for their casino. But it's basically a discount card. It's the way that they log you into their system and keep track of how much you're spending. But for the total rewards card at the Rio, you save at least like a dollar on meals in certain restaurants. So like American Bar and Grill, everything, I think you save around a dollar or two on what order. So that's, it's not a huge discount, but it's
nobody piles up.
Yeah. It's a little way to save some money. If you're flying in, you can also bring snacks, like non-perishable snacks in your luggage. Depending on what you have, you can ship stuff to the Rio. So you want to ship some dry goods, or you want to ship your crock pot.
Your coffee pot.
That's a great point, Heather. Just, we want to emphasize there is a UPS inside the Rio. So you can ship things to the UPS store inside the Rio, and you can pick them up at the UPS store. I actually plan to do that this year because I have so much stuff that I need to bring with me. I'm going to ship a box and pick it up when I get there.
Yeah.
So you can easily ship some of your stuff from home, even groceries. I wouldn't ship alcohol. I don't know if that's legal to ship alcohol to Las Vegas or not, but definitely all the cheap dry goods you can get from home, ship those in.
Yeah. I do know people that have shipped like their crock pot and other portable kitchen machinery to make food. And then they either ship their dry goods or they go to the grocery and get that stuff. You know, again, if you're on a budget, you can price that out and determine whether it's going to be less expensive. It probably is. Even if you have to pay a little extra to ship, you know, your crock pot, it's probably still going to be less expensive than eating out, you know, two or three times a day around the convention.
And plus, checking a bag, let's not forget, checking a bag on an airplane now is getting so expensive because you have to check it both ways. So, you know, throwing a bunch of stuff in a large suitcase or carrying two large suitcases with you that you have to check is going to cost you probably more or a lot more than it will to ship a box to and from Vegas.
Yeah, probably.
One of the things I like to emphasize, I already talked about it, is to hydrate.
Oh, God, yes.
Number one, you're in Vegas. I know that you're inside, but some people do walk outside Vegas. Aside from that, you're very active at this convention. You have to walk down to the convention hall. It's not a crazy, it's maybe like 5-10 minutes, but you're still very, very active, and everyone tends to forget to drink water. A lot of us go to the bars at night. We're drinking alcohol in the evening. You just don't think about hydration. Yep. So, okay. I like to buy some bottled water when I'm there. Last year, Jeff had the rental car, so they got some water at a local liquor store. They do sell water in the Rio gift shop. I don't think it's exorbitantly priced, but it's obviously going to be a little bit more expensive. However, the convention hall area, they have water stations available in pretty much every single room.
Yep.
And that water is free. They have cups to drink the water, or you can bring a bottle from home, or like maybe buy a bottle just one bottle in the gift store and then refill it as you go throughout the convention. So I just can't emphasize it enough. And even though I do, I don't always remember. But drink a lot of water, because that is number one way to prevent you from getting sick and dehydrated, run down.
Yeah, and you honestly, people, unless you live in the Midwest somewhere, if you're not from an area as dry as Las Vegas, you really can't prepare yourself enough for the dry atmosphere. Even inside the casino is bone dry, but if you walk outside in that heat, you can literally feel the moisture leaving your body. It is really, really dry. So
yeah,
you really need to drink five times more water than you would normally drink, I would think.
Yeah.
Maybe four times. Just sip it throughout the day. Just keep sipping and sipping and sipping. You'll get into the habit.
And when you're at the bar, remember, one alcoholic beverage, one glass of water. One alcoholic beverage, one glass of water. Again, I'm not good at following that rule.
But one and one.
You gotta just take, I mean, it's the best way to prevent getting sick, and you don't want to get sick. So very quickly, we talked a little bit about, you know, if it's not really a budget saver, but there are less expensive places to eat at the Rio. There's a deli that I've never eaten at, but I hear that it's all right, and it's generally under $10 a meal. Jeff and I spent a ton of time at Smash Burger, which was brand new last year. It replaced the Burger King, and it was really good. And again, depending on what you get, I think that like for a burger and fries, it's still around $10 to $12.
Yeah.
So again, not the cheapest option. We mentioned Wetzel's Pretzels. And then there's a cafe in Corks, which is inside the convention area. And again, not really the place, not who I'd recommend for food. They had it's kind of like stuff that's on warmers. So
it's a little pricey too. And you know, for what it really is, it's a little pricey.
Yeah. I got a Caesar salad. I think it was around $10 for a Caesar salad at Quark's. Still though, less expensive than going and sitting down at like American Bar and Grill. There's a buffet at the Rio that's not cheap. There's a Chinese restaurant, an Indian restaurant. They're all, I mean, I like the Indian restaurant, but those are your more expensive places to eat. A quick tip on my favorite place to eat at the convention is the Hash House. I think it's Hash House Agogo is the actual name. It's only open till around 2 or 3 p.m., so it's breakfast and lunch. And the portions are gigantic. So I like to split meals. They allow you to do that. There's no extra charge. So even if your chicken and waffles is $14, if you split it with someone, it's $7. Still going to be a little bit more expensive than, you know, making something in your room or whatnot. But at least it's a place where you can get good food and save a little bit of money.
Yes. And not to mention that if you are staying in the Rio, you do have the mini fridge. So if you do pay $14 and you don't split it with someone, you can take half of it back to your room for a second meal later or the next day, which I've done.
Yeah. As long as you don't mind that it's cold.
I mean, you know, you're trying to save money. I guess it's not the worst thing. Real quick, too, I don't know how this is going to make us sound. It made me sound terrible. But honestly, guys, we were talking before about going out to the bars after the con at night. And God knows everybody who goes to bars anywhere knows bars are expensive. Your best friend is a flask. Seriously, get a flask. I'm not even kidding. Get a flask. And the same time you're going out to the grocery store, buy yourself a bottle of something, whatever it is that you like, whether you be a rum person, a vodka person, a gin person, whatever, and fill up your flask with that stuff and just keep it in your pocket. I've never had anybody give anybody a hard time, you know, people who work at the Rio or at the bar. No one gives you a hard time about having one of those. And it'll save you so much money. drinking at night, because the prices at the Masquerade Bar and the I Bar, where everybody hangs out, are pretty high. I mean, I don't think I paid less than $7 or $8 for a beer at that bar. And, you know, you can buy, say, one beer at the bar, or even bring them down from upstairs from your room, and then just, you know, drink out of your flask and sip a beer. It'll save you so much money in the long run.
Yeah, we've never had anyone come up to us and be like, where did you get that? Da-da-da-da-da. So they don't really seem to care at all. A couple years ago, apparently at the Masquerade Bar, they were rounding up change. Like the bartenders were doing some stuff that may not have been legal.
Yes. Good point. Yeah.
I don't remember if it was like giving your change back. They weren't giving the correct change, I think, is what happened. So just, you know, just be aware of that. Definitely don't want to be taken advantage of. And people are pretty good about noticing that and letting everyone know.
Yeah, but it gets really hectic there at night, too. So there's a lot of people ordering drinks. The bar's really crowded. So it's easy for that kind of stuff to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So the last bits of advice is really regarding autographs, photo ops, and souvenirs, which is where the rest of your money gets spent. And honestly, there's not a lot of tips to help with these. There are a few, though. So autographs and photo ops, Creation offers those through their website. You can buy them online now. If you buy them online, you have to pay an additional fee. It's like their processing fee of $7.75 per ticket. Don't do that. Unless it is someone really big like Patrick Stewart. His stuff has already sold out multiple times. So then they've opened up a few more, I think, autographs. He's only doing autographs, and then a group photo op this year. Unless it's someone really big, and if you're not sure, you can always ask the group what they think. Mm-hmm. I do not buy any photo ops or autographs online. They don't charge that fee in person. So you save, you know, $8 just by avoiding doing that.
Oh, nice.
And you will find that in the vendors room and in the autograph room, a lot of the stars will do like a selfie photo op or just a basic camera photo op for less than you would spend on the professional photo. Again, you just make the compromise of not getting your own, you know, professional printed out photograph. You have a selfie on your phone or on your camera or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's generally, I don't know, like 20-30 bucks less than doing the Creation photo op. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. And I think a lot of times even the autographs will be a little less expensive at that person's table. So that's a way to save money there. Souvenir stuff, you know, there's a lot of really nice stuff to buy in the vendor's room, and I usually spend a lot of money there. I don't have any great advice aside from just, you know, if you're on a budget, pick something that you know you really want. It's hard for me because I like to buy this one and that one and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, take some time to walk around the vendor's room and think about what you're really going to enjoy the most. Sometimes by the end of the convention on Sunday, the vendors are a little bit more flexible on pricing. Mm-hmm. So you can haggle them a little bit to get a price lower.
And so they don't have to bring so much stuff back with them.
Exactly. That's pretty common across conventions, I've found. But, you know, you risk that your item may not be there by the last day. Yeah. So
one quick thing that I'll throw out there. This is a tip for anyone who's buying, I guess you would consider newer Trek merchandise or Trek merchandise that still may be in production at the convention. So you'd think that these guys would sell things, you know, at a good price at the convention, but that's not always the case. There are a lot of handmade things at the con that are exclusive to the con, which are great to buy there at the con. But there are certain things like action figures, some of the more newer action figures, some of the ship models and things. You'll see them there at the con, but sometimes the prices are actually a little higher than you would pay on a place like Amazon or Toys R Us. And I found that to be the case with, you know, Diamond Select action figures and certain collectibles like that. So, you know, if you see something like that at the con that you think you might want to buy, you know, the vendors might get a little mad at you for doing it, but whip out your phone and scan the barcode on that thing and look on the app. It saved me so many times. I'm like, oh, that action figure is so cool. And you know, you go on Amazon, it's $10 cheaper.
Yeah.
So I hate to say that because I'm sure the vendors are going to get angry if they hear me say that.
Heather gets a little angry. You say it's totally the best advice for someone that is on a budget.
Yes, it is.
I cannot deny that. And I am guilty. I wound up buying the Juan Ortiz art book where he did all the TOS covers. I wound up buying that on Amazon for about half the price of what they were charging in the vendor's room. Having managed a brick and mortar comic book store, I have to say that, you know, those people are all justified in what they charge for the most part, because they're brick and mortar stores and they pay more for those items versus Amazon. So, you know, spend your money wisely. If you have the extra money, I think it's great to support our vendors. It's not cheap to have a table in the vendor's room either. But definitely, if you're on a budget, stuff like books or toys, you can definitely find cheaper online.
Yeah, you want to find something
that really applies to most of our vendor people that we know very well. These are mostly the guys that just come in to sell straight up merchandise, not people like Mickey who sell handmade crafts. And there's a lot of that great stuff. And that's the stuff that I think people really should be looking to buy at these conventions, or some of these great things that people bring and sell at their tables that they make.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're going to go and buy things, then definitely buy something that's unique, not something you just get on Amazon.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, if you can find it on Amazon, didn't know it was on Amazon, it's kind of an interesting thing. You can go and look and see what's there. And it's like, oh, wow, didn't you know this is a thing? And you can look and buy it later.
Yeah, I'm totally guilty of doing that, you know, in just real life. Normal daily life is, oh, is this cheaper on Amazon? Yes, it is. I will buy it there. So really the final piece of advice that I can give people is to just save money over the year. You know, a lot of people don't use a lot of cash anymore. So like with my business, so I rarely have cash on me. So when my clients pay in cash, I take that cash and I put it in a jar. And that is my STLV jar. And so by by a full year that goes around, I've saved a dollar here, $5 there, $10 there. And then I've got a lot of cash that I can spend at the convention. I've just found that saving incrementally over time is a really great way to save money overall. It helps to have that cash on hand to know I've got $200 that I can spend at the convention versus I don't really know. So here's this credit card. Here's that credit card.
Yeah.
That's another idea, is you cannot take all of your credit cards with you. That will help you not spend a ton of money as well. You know, at the end of the day, I budget a lot of money for this convention. I think annually I spend between $2,000 and $3,000. That is sharing a room with only one person, staying at the Rio. That's buying a 5-day general admission pass. That's buying airfare. That's buying food. And that's spending a little more than I intend to in the vendor's room. I think at the end of the day, you know, once if you pay, you get your ticket in advance, you can pay for your room in advance, by the way, which may be helpful for some people. Once you book it, you can actually call ahead of time and just go ahead and pay for that. So that's a good idea, is to pay that off ahead of time. And you're still spending the money, but it doesn't hit you all at once. Versus, you know, going to the convention, buying all this stuff and then paying for your room. That's where it can really add up and get you. Ultimately, just save incrementally, and you'd be surprised with what you have by the time con season rolls around.
Absolutely true.
Excellent. Thank you for all this information. It's just like it's nice to think about and be able to like kind of plan maybe for next year, start just saving a little bit here and there to make it a little bit easier to do.
Yeah, I would always recommend booking your room as soon as possible. With the Rio, you pay, I think it's an $80 fee to hold the room, and you can cancel and get your money back at any point. But just for me, knowing that locking in the rate as soon as possible will ensure your cheaper rate, I tend to do that. Like the minute that those rates go up, I go ahead and call and book my room. And I think you can do the same with the Gold Coast as soon as those rates go up. I don't think the Gold Coast has sold out, so they haven't had to renegotiate a new discount with them.
Nice.
But yeah, there are definitely ways to save money. It's probably still going to be somewhat expensive, but you can certainly do it on a budget. And if you want more tips, definitely find us on Facebook, the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas Convention Group. That's our URL, like facebook.com/group/unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas Convention.
I'll go ahead and link this in the show notes as well.
Yeah, that would be great. We have and a pretty extensive file section that I have beefed up, and that includes our STOV glossary. And that glossary has links to all the threads where we've talked about all of this. And it's not just Jeff and I, it's all of our group members sharing their tips and tricks on how to save money, how to better navigate the con, et cetera. Jeff, do you want to just mention our STOV 101 episodes and the project you're working on?
Oh, yeah, sure. So this weekend, we'll see the third and final part of our STLV 101 series go live, and that's going to be tomorrow, actually Sunday. It's the 25th of June.
So 2 days ago from when this episode will come out.
Yes. 2 days prior to this episode coming out. So it'll be there for you when you go and look. And you can get there by going to shoreleave.thetricordertransmissions.com, and you'll see the episodes there. But we're also working on a special project, which is going to be a website that is dedicated to our STLV 101 series specifically, and it's going to be tailored to mobile devices like smartphones and tablets, so that way when you're at the convention, you can actually save this website as an app to your home screen on your iPhone, your Android phone, your tablet, what have you, and refer to it while you're there. It's going to have all sorts of relevant information, important information, phone numbers, addresses, places you can go, and other resources, web links and everything, and of course, the links to our STLV 101 series and some of our other helpful STLV-related episodes that we've already done in the past, like our cosplay episode and the navigating conventions with social anxiety, or anxiety in general, rather, that's coming up in the near future. So all that stuff is going to be coalesced in the one place that you can have with you at your fingertips at the convention. And it's going to be an evolving live thing. It's going to be updated frequently as new information comes around. So keep your eyes out for that. We'll be doing an announcement in the Facebook group and on our website really soon about that.
Sounds great.
I have a couple, like one or two last things. Since we're on the Synthaholics podcast, mm-hmm. I thought I would mention the Tricorder Transmissions, our podcast network, is having our fourth birthday party at STLV. It's going to be on Thursday night. I think it's kind of TBD right now as far as the time and place. That'll be determined once we get there. It'll be later evening, so probably like 8 or 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we invite everyone to come. There is a group event in the STLV, unofficial STLV group, for everyone to come. And now I'm trying to think what the second thing I was going to mention was.
I won't be able to be there, but happy birthday early, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. I felt like it was alcohol related, but I can't think of what it may have been besides our party.
Yeah, I don't think anything else has really come to. Well, we're going to be honest. We're going to be doing a lot of on-the-floor interviews.
Yes.
At STLV. So if you're in the hallway and you see us, we're going to have big badges on that say Jeff and Heather, and it's going to have our Shore Leave logo on it, so it'll be easy to identify us. And we're going to be talking to all of the people that we can at the convention about their convention experiences and memories. So we're going to have a dedicated Shore Leave interview episode of the show post-STLV. And I think we're going to be trying to do a live stream at some point on Facebook as well. We talked about that, doing some Facebook live stuff as well from the convention floor.
This is why Jeff is my podcast partner, because he can read my mind. That is exactly what I wanted to say. And honestly, when I listened, it was one of the most recent podcasts that Synthaholics did, where you were at a local convention and you were just talking to people about their reactions to Discovery.
Yeah.
You know, we had kind of planned on doing these interviews beforehand, but that episode just really solidified the fact that it's just so much fun to talk to fans and listen to what they have to say. So thanks for that. It definitely inspired us to move forward with our idea of talking to people on the convention floor. So certainly look out for us to have a little interview if you're coming.
Yeah, guys. I know we've got one member who's going to be one listener who's going to be going. Joe DePinto. He will be at the Star Trek Las Vegas this year, so hopefully he'll be able to find you guys and say hi. That would be awesome.
That'd be great.
Cool. Yeah, we'll give out our Twitter handle so you can you can tweet at us when you're there, and we'll be able to meet up with people at some point during the 5 days. So Heather and I will be checking our Twitter feeds on and off, I'm sure, as people talk to us. So I guess I'm Warp Factor Jeff on Twitter if you're looking for me.
Yep, I'm LLA Posper.
Or you can tweet at our show, which is simple. It's at Shoreleave. Heather and I both get the notifications for that account. So if you're looking for us or just want to say hi or you're looking to be interviewed and be on the show, tweet at Shoreleave while you're there too, and both of us will get it.
Yep.
Fantastic. Any other social media where you want people to look you up at?
Oh, God, we're everywhere. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thetricordertransmissions. We have our own website, thetricordertransmissions.com, that has links to our other social media avenues. Our Twitter for the network is @tricordershow. We also have a YouTube channel that you can get to through our website, thetricordertransmissions.com. What am I missing, Heather?
Nothing. I'll just reiterate for the 1,000th time. So please come join us on Facebook at the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas convention group.
It's incredible. Awesome. Group of people.
It's an awesome group. Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, our music, our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. Warp 11 provides the rest of our music. You can find this show at Synthaholics.com. You can email us so we can read your emails on the air at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Go on iTunes, rate us, review us, because and go and rate and review the Tricorder Transmissions and Shore Leave, because these things are important for us to gain new followers. So rate and review our show, rate and review their show, follow them on all their social media, follow us. I'm at David_J_Duncan. The show's at Synthaholic Duo. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Guy is at GS Davis Art. And thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, and have fun at Star Trek Las Vegas. It's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I've